just a friend. That's all I've ever been. No, you don't know me.
I never knew the art of making love, though my heart aches with love for you.
Chance that you might love me too.
Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. Ray Charles making that a hit on this day, so we are hearing his voice, and as we always bring our music interludes to all of you that fit on this holiday, I mean on this day in history. And we're talking about what has been going on over the last couple of months. And we saw yesterday that the University of Indiana had a breach of 146,000 students' personal data, including their Social Security numbers and addresses, may have been exposed to a data breach. We saw just earlier that the University of Maryland, 300,000 people were affected. We saw with Target Corporation about a month ago, they exposed credit card and personal information on 110 million consumers. 5 million cards were used fraudulently in that. Neiman Marcus, 350,000, approximately 9,200 of those were used fraudulently since the attack. So, and all of our data is all over the place. The cyber attacks, President Obama has said that one of the gravest national security dangers to the United States in the future are built around cybersecurity. So we are here with Dr. Lisa Yeo. Dr. Lisa Yeo is Assistant Professor of Information and Systems Operations Management at Loyola University Maryland's Selinger School of Business. Good to have you in the studio, Lisa. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
And Dr. Rick Forno joins us one more time. Once again, I should say, Director of the University of Maryland Baltimore County's Graduate Cybersecurity Program, Assistant Director of UMBC's Center for Cybersecurity, and Junior Affiliate Scholar at the Stanford Law School Center for Internet and Society. And Rick, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Good to be here.
And you all can join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Log on to the Facebook pages. Tweet me at Mark Steiner. Your thoughts. Were you one of those breached? 410-319-8888. So, Rick, let me start with you. So what does this mean, they were breached?
Well, the breach is a catch-all phrase term, meaning that the information was compromised and stolen, basically, taken. So 350,000 Maryland accounts, 100-some-odd thousand from, Illinois, I think, or Indiana.
Indiana, yeah.
Yeah, those are all accounts and information that has been, you know, taken from these institutions and therefore violated the security.
And so, Lisa, I mean, so, and this is seeming to become more and more frequent. So these breaches, they can be anything from the university not having a system in place to protect them to people actually stealing the data, right?
Yeah.
Or is it both?
It's a little bit of both, and sometimes it's a mistake. In the case of Indiana, they made a change that put sensitive information actually available on the web unexpectedly. So, yeah. So they at one point in time did have security in place. You make some changes, and you run into what happens as you make a change and the cascading effects of that. And
so, I mean, I when we read these things, I mean, people are very worried that, and everybody was very worried that, especially in department stores, that people are going to use their money and use their name to buy whatever they want to buy. But the security breaches can be even deeper at universities because it's your Social Security number. And once you have your Social Security number, you can do most anything.
Well, I agree. And one of the concerns I have, particularly with the university, regardless of where they're located, is the history, the tail involved here. When you have accounts that have been compromised going back to, 15, 20 years, it really leads people to wonder, well, how far back am I responsible for protecting my information? And it places a large question of trust on these institutions that maintain these records going back so many years. I mean, normally it's usually a government organization,
right?
The IRS or the Census Bureau that has that type of information. Now you've got credit card companies, banks, universities that have this information, and that can stay with you or come back to haunt you 20 years down the road.
So a couple of things here. I want to talk about what this portends for our future, given we are a digitized world and we're also deeply connected. We looked at the positive aspect of that, and we had DJ Spooky and others on here on Monday talking about how this new digital world connects us all and is creating a whole new mass of humanity to create a new world, which is the positive end of this digital world. But the dangerous side of this digital world is just what we're talking about at this moment. And one of those things that people are talking about are the laws, the protective laws. Like California has adopted a law that requires detailed disclosure in expedient time, quickly, if something would happen with a university or a business, to say, this is what just happened, you have to put it out there. There's a much softer blanketing law that the retail organization wants to do nationally. So the question is, what do you think, just in that level first, what kind of laws need to be in place to make consumers, whether it's consumers of education or consumers of a department store, feel safe and make them safer than they are? And can those laws do that?
So California was really a pioneer in this, and we have a lot to thank them for in terms of breach disclosure. I would say, to me, when I look at this, Social Security numbers are kind of the very scary thing to me. Credit cards are a problem. We have a way to deal with them.
Out of that.
But a loss of Social Security number is a really big deal. And so the very fact that the U.S. laws allow companies to ask for the Social Security number. And in many places, we have an opportunity to say, well, I don't want to give it to you. And they say, okay, that's all right. I'm not going to do business with you. And that's the end of it. So you don't really have that. And there needs to be a change to some extent in the law of what is an acceptable use of a Social Security number, who is allowed to keep it, why we would use it. Everyone says we have to do it for credit checks. But really, that's the government's ID number. It was never meant to be a personal identifier that's used across the board. And so I think.
So are you suggesting that commercially we should never, our Social Security number should never be used?
I think that organizations really need to step back and say, why am I collecting it? Do I have to report it to the government in some way? And if I don't, why do I really need to use it? Can I do a credit check by asking for a different piece of ID? Can I do something? Because there's a lot of money now that, the University of Maryland's going to have to spend to provide the credit checks to various other people. If I'm not a university, my Social Security was not breached in that situation, but, if it's used, now I have a lot of problems that I have to go through to try and, prove that I am who I am. Getting a new Social Security number is not a trivial operation. You can't do it very easily like I could if my credit card was stolen. So I really do think that in the U.S., you need to step back and think, what is an acceptable use? And as a business, do I really need this? Is it worth the cost of trying to protect that and what I'd have to pay if it's breached? Or should I just say, that's too much information. That's the wrong information for what I need to do for my business. I'll choose something else instead.
Rick?
I would agree with that and say that in addition to moving away from the Social Security number, having some form of accountability, whether it's illegal, followed by some kind of punitive sanctions in terms of a fine for companies that break these laws that result in these sort of outbreaks, if you will, these epidemics of information disclosures, crucial way to kind of get people on board is to say, well, look, if you don't take better steps to protect this information, you'll face large fines. Additionally, I think that there's no need to have 300,000 Social Security numbers in one central database going back 20 years necessarily. It may be that you need to go back a couple of years and then keep the remainder in an off-site storage to use as needed, but that shouldn't be easily accessible by one person to have this treasure trove of information available.
So the breaches that took place at, let's say, Target and Lehman Marcus, were these people who attacked Lehman Marcus and Target, or was it a lack of security and something that they blew?
My understanding is in both of those cases, there were different targeted attacks in some way.
That's what I thought, right.
As opposed to just poor security. These were things, in the case of Lehman Marcus, they believe there's some malware involved in it. In the case of Target, they believe that inappropriate use of some credentials from an outsourced provider led to the problem. But
there's no serious legislation being thought of now to stop using Social Security numbers for things other than what we need for the government. Is that right? I mean, this is a conversation we're having, but nobody's having this conversation seriously on Capitol Hill.
No, to my knowledge, there is no legislation to recommend moving away from Social Security numbers.
So it seems to me this would be interesting to do for another time on our show for a longer period of time, though, Rick and Lisa, we have to begin to really wrestle, I think, in a very public way about our digital future and what is acceptable information for companies to own and what's not acceptable information, how we govern that given everything is out there, whether it's Facebook or internet accounts. the commercial accounts. I mean, this is we're really in a very murky, deep area here, Rick.
We are, and I think everything you said is of crucial importance, and unless we've got a magic wand, I don't see an easy solution to any of them.
So this is the cybersecurity man talking to us here, so that's a frightening statement from you. So what do we think? I mean, let's talk for a moment just about what we think can happen. How do we begin to wrestle with this?
One thing, and the Target CEO actually called for this, and I find it amazing. I'm actually a Canadian. I've only been down here for 2 years now. The use, from our financial perspective, payment cards with chip technology. The chip and PIN technology has been adopted widely in various other parts of the world. It has been shown to reduce fraud in the UK and Canada. And so, to me, moving down here, and it's not automatic that we're doing this.
What does that mean, chip technology?
Essentially, there's a chip on your payment card, so be that your debit card or your credit card, and you have to actually insert the card into a device and type in a PIN, and that's when the credit transaction goes through. It's not foolproof. There have been some security researches have shown ways around it, but it is considered more significant because you actually physically have to have the card and the PIN at the same time. So it's harder to do replay attacks. It's harder to create a fake card because of the technology in this. It's expensive, but fraud is expensive too. So my understanding is that the payment card industry has actually said to U.S. retailers that they will stop protecting them from fraudulent use of these cards if in 2015, fall 2015, if they haven't switched to chip and PIN technology. So it's coming.
Rick?
Yeah, that's a good, helpful first step. Again, raising the bar where we can. Chip and PIN, I think, is something that's long overdue in this country.
But is there something that we need to start talking about in terms of what information should be available to companies, to people, to internet groups, to Facebook, to all those other places to limit the what information they can have and what can be accessed?
Well, yes. I mean, there's always the internet and all these services have grown up sort of on the fly. We've written this book as we've gone along. So go back, even before the internet, Social Security numbers came along and they started being used more and more by motor vehicle bureaus and credit companies and so forth. So maybe it is time to ask these questions and begin this public dialogue to take a collective approach to, try to fix some of these problems. And moving away from Social Security numbers as a commercial identifier, I think, is a great first step if we can do it.
And my wife often says, why do they need our Social Security number to look for this? Why are we giving them this? We should not be giving them this information.
And we should be asking those questions of ourselves and of companies. And if there is a critical mass of this, then we will start to see organizations say, okay, there is an alternative. I don't need your Social Security for this. And so I do agree with that. And I think that not only does the public have to be a part of this, but I think executives and companies really need to make this part of their risk management. What is the value of this information to me? What does it cost me to keep it protected? And is there really a cost benefit that this is making a big difference to my organization?
So what is the bottom line that people need to fear about, Rick and Lisa, before we finish, that people have to worry about it and watch for what just happened in Indiana and Maryland? What is it?
I think being safe and, thinking before you, provide information to a company or a website is a good first step. A lot of these problems, unfortunately, are outside of our control as end users and customers. My concern is what's being done behind the scenes at these organizations that hold this information. That, to me, is a bigger concern than what I might fork over as a user.
And I'd have to agree that that is the problem, that the information is already being stored and captured, and we now lose any power over it. If you are a potential victim, really, we're at a stage where all you can do is really monitor what's going on with your credit reports and your credit accounts, and that's really unfortunate.
And the other thing, of course, when it comes to at least the commercial end of this, is what you were talking about before, is whether it's a chip on a card or legislation that says that consumers have the right to know immediately what happened to whether it's one person or a million people in a credit card company have the right to know what has just happened so they can protect their future.
To the best of their ability, yeah.
Right. Yeah. And that's not difficult for a company to do. This is reluctance of a company for their own commercial and profit reasons more than it is for protection of the company.
That does play a role in it, but if you're involved with law enforcement, sometimes they don't necessarily want the information to be widely known if they're trying to then backtrack to be able to. So there's this sort of balancing act, right? Do we want to actually catch the perpetrators and build a really strong case, finding that proper point where they tell us versus enable law enforcement to do their jobs too?
Closing thought, Rick Forno?
No, I mean, this is an open-ended problem that I don't see an easy resolution anytime soon. I think there is a shared responsibility between the customers, the end users, and corporations who hold this information, and, of course, government regulators and lawmakers. But I don't see this being resolved satisfactorily anytime soon, unfortunately.
I don't either, but I want to thank both of you for being here to this conversation. Rick Forno, it's always good to have you with us from the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, cybersecurity expert, as well as Sarah Love. I mean, I keep looking at the wrong sheet. Lisa Yeo, excuse me, Assistant Professor of Information System Operations at Loyola. Good to have you both with us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. We're going to take a very brief break and come back. And when we come back, Leah Gilmore is with us as we continue our look at the culture of our community and some important issues and people we're going to be talking to, including the new leader of the contemporary. We're going out with "I Guess I'll Hang My Tears Out to Dry" by the great Dexter Gordon, who was born on this day in 1923.